It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows, and I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5, with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Off and rolling on a Wednesday, July 2nd, 2025 is the date. Welcome to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, Gabe Kuhn, on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning. On X at C-Dunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
You got any plans for the 4th? What are you doing? Anything fun?
Pool party.
Pool party. Okay.
Very excited. I'm going to catch a couple movies. I'm behind on my movies, kind of. I saw F1 this week. I plan to see 28
Did
Years
it rip?
Later.
Did it rip?
F1 absolutely rips. Absolutely rips. See it in the biggest, loudest theater you can see it in. I know nothing about F1. But I understood everything that I needed to in the movie. It was great. Jurassic World comes out. Rebirth comes out this weekend. Yep. A lot of great movies. So it'll be a big movie weekend, big pool weekend.
Yeah, I have a travel day tomorrow.
Can't wait.
Travel day.
Ooh.
First time with my
seven-month-old.
Oh, God. Pray for me. I'm usually the one on flights that's like, shut that damn baby up. And now I'm going to be the one that, hopefully I don't have to deal with people around me doing that, but... We have a lap baby for a flight with a layover in Houston to San Diego. I am excited for my trip out there. Get to play Torrey Pines on Friday. That should be fun.
That's not bad.
With the Pops on July 4th.
All right.
Yeah. Playing 18, riding. Should be fun. Should be a good time. But I would be lying to you if I said I wasn't stressed about our travel day tomorrow. Probably 6 or 7 hours out to San Diego with a layover and... Young kid. We'll see how it goes. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have an injury to talk about with the Grizzlies, so we'll get to overreaction, not an overreaction off the top. Also, we have some more NBA news where that comes from. We know Dame Lillard was waived by the Bucks. That'll be worth discussing. We have an update also with the gambling investigation going on in the NBA right now. Malik Beasley. Of course, he was set to sign a 3-year, probably $45 million deal with the Detroit Pistons. Instead, they give that to Duncan Robinson, three years, $48 million. But the investigation into Malik Beasley and gambling is revealing a lot of tough things about him. I don't know if you got to see that, Connor. So we'll talk about that on the show. As far as guests are concerned, we have some football to talk about. I'll ask about the Steelers, get into some college football, and Alabama's recruiting as well with Kyron Samuels at 4:30. Similar things with David Cobb at 5. And then at 6 o'clock, we have some Grizzlies to get to with Rob Fisher. Of course, pre- and post-game host at FanDuel Sports Network also does sidelines for them. Now, we have a very important injury to talk about. It affects us all. And I want to start there before we get to overreaction, not an overreaction. Red Panda goes down last night. One of the best halftime performers in the history of halftime performers. She was doing the halftime show for the Commissioner's Cup in the WNBA. Of course, the Indiana Fever went on to win. But she's on a unicycle. She does all the plates and everything else. And as soon as she started her act, she fell 8 feet from her unicycle directly on the floor. That is tough.
A nation mourns. A nation
Brutal.
Mourns.
Brutal. She had to, they got her to the hospital. Looks like nothing life-threatening by any stretch of the imagination. But they took her off on a wheelchair, and that's just tough to see. I mean, I've seen Red Panda perform at FedEx Forum and elsewhere. I've never seen her drop a plate. Now, other people have seen her drop a plate. I certainly have never seen her fall from her unicycle.
I've never seen her fall.
And the video's tough to watch.
I'm never going to watch it. Don't you dare try to show me that video of Red Panda going down. There's no way in hell I'm going to watch that. There's no way in hell. I think I've seen her drop once. Once, I think
one
maybe.
Plate.
It's a fuzzy memory, so I may be making that up.
Plate or bowl. Yeah.
It played her bowl. But, you know, it's. I think that she is one of those special things in life, special people in life,
yeah,
that have a 100% approval,
yes,
rating across the board.
Not 99.9.
If you're around me and you have a false word to say about her, you're getting punched in the throat. It's immediate. No hesitation. Don't you dare say anything bad about her because a throat punch is coming.
I think that's fair. I did learn, though, because everybody is really having a tough time with the news. 55 years of age and does
what?
That just about every night.
That's
like,
incredible.
She, I heard Jason Smith and Brad Carson talking about it earlier on Jason and John. This may be a sign of the back end of her prime. She may need to hang it up soon. Because we
don't. I don't even talk about that.
We don't need a 55-plus-year-old woman falling from 8 feet ever again. We don't need that. That could be life-threatening if it goes wrong.
You're going to make me cry. I don't want to think about it.
That's tough.
I don't want to think about it.
Okay. All right. Maybe she could have a
can we just lower it?
Exit tour, a retirement tour.
A retirement tour?
Yeah.
For Red Panda?
When she recovers.
I would love that.
I come through Memphis a couple times, you know, just go around to all the NBA.
Is she the greatest halftime show of all time?
I mean, most halftime shows, I usually get up and go relieve myself.
When she's in the building.
Get a beer, whatever it is. But when she's in the building, I don't leave my seat. So I think for that reason and that reason only, she's got to be up there. But you also have the dogs, the little tiny dogs that like balance on the... balance on the like basketballs and everything else. Those are pretty good.
Those aren't bad.
Beale Street Flippers,
good. They're fantastic. Yeah. Yes.
But
great.
I think I have to put her one. I think I have to put her number one overall. If we're doing a draft, she would go number one overall for halftime shows.
Probably so.
Yeah. All right. Now let's go ahead and do what we do on a Wednesday. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
All right, Gabe. Jaren Jackson Jr. has turf toe and will undergo surgery. The Grizzlies said he will be reevaluated in 12 weeks. The Grizzlies will now be without, in all likelihood, their starting front court, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zach Edey, to start the season. The expectations next year should be play-in, overreaction, not an overreaction.
Not an overreaction. I do want to go in there. 12 weeks. If he's reevaluated and we get good news, maybe he can start the season. But we know the Grizzlies are very, very cautious, right? So I think in all likelihood you're going to see Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zach Edey out to start the year. And the expectations next year, even with without this Jaren Jackson Jr. news, probably should have been playing as well. We have to see Ja Morant on the floor on a consistent basis. We got to see what Jalen Wells looks like in year two. What does Cedric Howard look like in his rookie season? Is Ty Jerome going to be a good addition? I still feel like this team is probably, if everything was right, probably playing. Now, that doesn't mean that some things could surprise you along the way. Maybe G.G. Jackson gets going. Maybe Cedric Howard is an unbelievable Rookie of the Year candidate. We're going to have to see all of that. But, you know, when we look at the Western Conference, you have the Thunder at the top, just won the title. The Houston Rockets have put themselves up there in that category. The Denver Nuggets took the Oklahoma City Thunder to 7 games. It was a really tough series. They were up 2-1 at one point, and they have added just about everything they need. I honestly look at that Nuggets roster as potentially better than their championship season. I mean, just sort of looking at it with Jonas and Cam Johnson now instead of Michael Porter Jr., it's pretty impressive. But the West is going to be as competitive as possible. And I think the Grizzlies are in sort of a gap year. So I thought sort of seeds 7 to 10 were always sort of where they should fall. And with this, we're just going to have to see Ja's star shine brighter to start the year. Doesn't mean they're not going to get Jaren and Zach Edey back. They expect them to make full recoveries, and it should be all right. But I think the expectations ultimately for this team going into next season should have always been playing.
Yeah, you know, I think especially with the injury now to Jaren Jackson Jr., and he may have a slower ramp up into the season, it seems like there's a possibility that he could be good to go by the beginning of the season, but we know that with the Memphis Grizzlies specifically, they're usually a bit more conservative with injuries, so I wouldn't be surprised if he misses a little bit of the beginning. But I think that, you know, we talked about it yesterday with Parker Fleming. We've been talking about it with Grizzlies guests, the two of us. Basically, since the draft and free agency began and the Desmond Bane trade, really,
right,
the expectations for this team next season need to be adjusted. And I do think that they are still a playoff team as constructed, even with Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson Jr. missing a little bit of time. I still think that they will be a playoff team. But if they may be a play-in team, it might be having to go through the play-in to make it through the playoffs. But ultimately, I think as long as Ja Morant can give you 60, 65 games next season, you're going to be in a good position to be a playoff team, because I think he is that impactful, and he can make up the loss of not having Jaren out there, or not having Zach Edey out there, or not having Desmond Bane out there. I think that Ja Morant is that talented to where he can raise the level of the guys around him and himself. He can win basketball games damn near by himself in a lot of ways, as long as the other guys are playing defense for him on the other end. So as long as Ja is giving you 60, 65 games next season, I think the play-in is a reasonable expectation, but I think that they might be able to shoot above that. Like you said, you still have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You still have Cedric Coward, who might be able to replicate a rookie season that we saw in Jalen Wells. You have Jalen Wells, and you hope that he can make a bit of a leap because he had an excellent rookie season. When Zach Edey comes back, you hope that he's playing like he did at the end of last year. You hope Brandon Clark can return to form. G.G. Jackson, this feels like a really big opportunity for G.G. Jackson to really show what he has this offseason. My hope is that he's been working on defense. We know that what he can give you on offense. Can he give you positive defensive minutes? And if he can, that's going to go a long way for the Grizzlies.
I will say, like, just...
And you have Ty Jerome.
Having a new coach and Tuomas Isolo and your starting front court could be out to start the season. They're going to be out most of the summer, most of the offseason, when it could be a learning period for them, sort of figuring out what Tomas Isolo is going to ask for offensively, defensively. Like, that just stinks. And when we just talk about the injury news over the past 3-4 years, it's been so brutal. And I see, like, Grizzlies fans going through these phases. Originally, you see Ja hurt and Jaren hurt and guys leaving the floor. And it's like, it was brutal originally. Then you got to a point after that completely lost season where it just became comical. You're sitting there like, oh my gosh, are they ever going to get their luck now back? And then now you're back to pain, like full-on pain, because you want to see what this team can do, what they can grow like after the Desmond Bane trade, and you end up with this. But we'll see. 10 to 12 weeks shouldn't be that much, as far as missed time for Jaren. And we'll see if he can start the year. I'm not overly positive about it. Now, what do they do in the meantime? They have to go get a center.
They have to get
a center.
Strengthen
the center position, whether that's Goga Batadze or some of the names that have been brought up on the World Wide Web. But outside of that, like, to start the year, if you're down these two guys, who else can you – what can you do? I mean, even with an extra body at the center position, I mean, you're going to ask for minutes from John Conchar if he's still on the team.
If he's still on the team.
And Jay Huff is going to have to play a big role. And he did a good job with that at the beginning of the year last year.
Yeah.
When they had their issues. So, just stinks. Like, I have no other way of putting it. Like, seeing Grizzlies PR pop up on my timeline has become sort of a nightmare, right? Like, it's nightmare fuel for Grizzlies fans and for the media, because you know it's not going to be good.
Well, last night when I got the notification, I saw breaking Jaren Jackson Jr. And my first thought before I read all of it was, oh, it's the number change announcement. Like, it's going to be the official, he's going from 13 to 8, no big deal. And as I continue reading, I was like, no.
Surgery?
No. I was like, oh my God. And it's what's so unfortunate about it is he got hurt trying to improve for next season.
Right.
Like, he was playing
probably
basketball
open runs
when it happened. And that's just, it's such a blow. And it is, you know, I saw a great tweet. I can't remember who sent it out, so apologies to that person. But they basically said, long-term injuries with the Grizzlies, or injuries to the Grizzlies now from PR, just don't even emotionally impact me anymore. I'm so used to it. I have right. I'm calloused up. I have no more feel. It's like, of course he did. Of course he got the contract. So of course he got hurt now because
it could
of the
have been
Memphis
pre-contract
Grizzlies.
Too.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying.
I do
I'm not
love,
saying that.
I do
yeah.
love like the overreactions
Bunch
and the comments
idiots.
On Grizzlies PR. Like, just, oh, did they know about this when they signed him to the max extension?
Yes.
They were gonna give it to him.
They were gonna give it to him regardless.
It's not
and,
some. It's not exactly some Achilles or ACL.
And
okay?
let's
it's,
stop with the nonsense about. Jaren Jackson Jr. tried to pull one over on the grid. Just it's absolute it's nonsense. Nonsense.
They would have paid him $240
They would have paid
million,
him no matter what because he earned that money. And to be honest, last time Jaren missed the beginning of the season with an injury, you know what he did that year? He won Defensive Player of the Year. So, you know, maybe that's a good omen. But can we actually look into this? Did the Grizzlies build the FedEx Forum on burial grounds? Like, what the hell's going on? I do not understand how the injury bug can be this frequent for the Grizzlies. They are snake bitten.
When they was it 2022 or 2021 when they beat the Timberwolves in their last playoff series win, right? And then they played the Warriors in six games. They had such good injury luck that year. They really did. Like they just did not have guys missing time. And since then, it's just devolved. I have no idea. I have no real explanation for it.
When you pull up right now the Grizzlies depth chart on ESPN. Three of the starters are injured. Three of your top five guys are injured right now. And then Cedric Coward is technically injured.
Yeah.
Brandon Clark, he's injured as well. And you're just like, oh, my God.
I
when
also,
will it end?
Did you think – I didn't know turf toe required surgery.
I thought
it was just a rehab process.
I'm not a doctor.
Neither am I. But I was surprised that turf toe, I guess it's different.
I mean, it
know,
happened to Darius
football.
Garland. Darius Garland had to get surgery for it.
Yeah, I didn't know. It was.
I think I
surgery.
You know, we all Googled as soon as the announcement, and I was like, "Oh my God, it says 6 months."
It says 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, I think everybody was, "Holy crap, could this be a 6 month?" I don't know the severity of it. I don't know. You know, if somebody out there is a doctor and could send in to us
and
tell us,
football guys sort of just do pain tolerance and get back on the field, though. So that's what I'm used to. I'm not sure how it works.
I wonder if it's just different because of how basketball is played.
Yeah, I think
versus
probably.
Football. You know, I do know that. You know, sometimes when I play basketball, if I jam my toe into the front of my shoe, it does hurt like an SOB. So,
sure.
You know, if it has to have surgery, it must be rough.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. God, just another injury. All right, next up, the Bucks waived and stretched Damian. The Bucks waived and stretched Damian Lillard yesterday, and he will miss next season after tearing his Achilles in the first round of the NBA playoffs. The Bucks did Damian Lillard wrong. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
Okay, so I'm going to say overreaction. Now, I get where people will say he was done wrong. You know, the Bucks brought him in, had these big grand plans for him next to Giannis, and there's also reports out there that Giannis is not pleased with the way the Bucks have treated him through this. They waived him basically so they could bring in Miles Turner. But, you know, I get where people look at it and say this was nasty work by the Bucks. He had his blood clots, and he was sort of suffering at the end of the season. He gets over that and pushes through, gets back on the floor, then he tears his Achilles, then it just sort of feels like the Bucks are turning their back on him by waving him and not sticking with him through the torn Achilles. But, you know, based on everything I've read, this is something that Damian Lillard actually likes. It seems like he's okay with it, right? He gets to pick his own team for the first time ever in his entire career, and it's 5 years of a stretch worth $22 million per year. So it's not like the Bucks are, you know, giving him a raw deal when it comes to the money that was still owed on his guaranteed contract. They're going to give him that money. They just have to make a decision for the meantime that's best for their franchise. And I don't blame them for it. I get where people have their issues with it, but it seems like Dame can rehab his Achilles, focus on that, and then pick his destination next. Now, where is his destination next? That's a very interesting conversation. I think the Celtics have come up in that.
Lakers.
The Heat, the Lakers. Like, there's a lot of names.
I've seen the Blazers
again. And he, again, he can pick wherever he wants to go in regards to, you know, winning a championship, his fit. So I get people's issues with this. He fought for the Bucks, had the blood clots, came back towards Achilles, and it feels like, if you just look at the wave and stretch sort of situation, it feels like they're turning their back on him, but they're giving him the money and giving him some freedom along the way. And I don't think that needs to be something that we overthink.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't understand why every single time something like this happens, it immediately goes to, it's a slap in the face. They've disrespected him. Y'all, they're paying him millions of dollars to recover, and he can now go where he wants to.
He's going to make over $100 million from them in the next 5 years.
It's also no secret that Dame didn't love being in Milwaukee. His family was not in Milwaukee. He was away from them. He requested to be in Portland to work out this offseason, and the Bucks didn't necessarily want him to be there, but we know that that was happening. It's one of those deals where I hope that they at least let him know beforehand and it wasn't just a complete blindside. But if you ask Damian Lillard, hey, are you really upset about this move? He'd probably be like, oh, I got a little bit of a feeling with the way they told me, but I'm being paid millions of dollars to sit at home to recover, and I get to pick my spot and spend time with my family.
Right.
I think Damian Lillard's going to be fine.
It's really not that big a deal. It didn't work out with the Bucks. He gets to go pick his destination. Now, what would you want to see for Dame after this Achilles injury? And we'll see what he looks like. Like, that's going to be the biggest question.
What would I like to see?
Is he going to be okay? But like, where would you like to see him go?
Can I throw a name out there?
Sure.
I'm just Denver.
Denver. Okay.
I think he would be really good with Denver.
Okay, but Jamal Murray, like, what would that role look like?
He can run the two.
Okay.
Dame, end of his career. Because I would like, Dame's one of those guys where I would like to see him get a ring. You know, I've had my feelings about Dame in the past. He was annoying with the whole, I don't want to go, I want you to trade me, but you can't trade me anywhere except
for this
one.
He didn't want to cheat the grind.
Yeah, he didn't want to cheat. Like, that's ridiculous. We know, come on, Dame. He's a huge tell your story type of guy. I think that Dame would be really fun in a place like Denver. Minnesota, I think,
yeah,
could be
that's
a
one that
fun
came up. I think Mark Spears said that on ESPN today.
I think Minnesota.
They need a point guard, and yeah. I don't know if they're trying to bet on the young guys right this
It's second. I don't know. It's, you know, Orlando could use somebody like Dame for
sure.
Shooting, and they got Jalen Suggs down there. There's not a perfect landing spot for him, really. I do think that the Lakers make sense. I think,
the three names that came up are the sort of usual suspects.
Right.
Warriors, Celtics, and Lakers.
I don't want the Warriors. I don't want to do that.
Would make sense, but him and Luka, that would be kind of interesting. Again, this is if Dame is still, still himself.
That's the thing. What's
Warriors,
Dame going to look like?
Warriors with, like, the shooting would be insane. With
well, the
Steph.
Thing with Dame is, when he comes back, healthy, because it's going to be a year.
Right.
Would he take a six-man role? Because if he takes a six-man role, it changes the outlook of where he could go. Like, if he's in Denver as a six-man, or he's in Minnesota as a six-man, or he's in L.A. as a six-man, that could be dangerous. Like, could Indiana
right.
use him
now,
as a six-man?
Now, granted, I don't think that's what this
could
is going to look like, because Achilles
six-man.
Surgeries and Achilles rehab has gotten a lot better. And
it
he's
has.
Not some high-flying, crazy athlete. He's got his dribble moves and his step back threes. That's sort of what he does.
To be honest, I like him to stay in the East. Boston would be good.
I think Boston is the one that
Boston.
I would look at. Just got rid of Jrue Holiday, and they sort of have a gap year here. So, like, the Jason Tatum Achilles timeline and the Dame Achilles timeline sort of work the same. They're trying to shed more salary, and they may be ready to go in 2027. So I think the Celtics are the team that intrigue me the most if they can get their hands on Damian Lillard.
Yeah, that's not bad. It's the Heat do seem like, though, there's mutual interest always between the Heat and Damian Lillard. And they
but
certainly,
that roster.
Yeah.
That roster.
Well, that's why, like, that Heat roster, when the whole KD trade stuff came out,
and
I was like,
if they keep Hero, could you, like, Hero playing maybe off guard with Dame Lillard? That is the worst defensive
Gabe. I think we could score. We could score on them.
Probably that would be the worst defensive backcourt in the history of basketball. Worse than what Dame had when he was with CJ McCollum, and that was bad.
Right.
That's ultimately why the Trailblazers couldn't.
I'll be really interested to see where he goes, because I do think a lot of teams could use him. But what role does he want? If he's wanting to start, I think it shrinks the amount of teams he could go to. But I think that, like, Denver, Minnesota, Boston, right. Miami, those are really intriguing teams.
The only reported call he's received, though, is the Warriors. And Mark Spears said that on the
show. I don't want to do that. I just don't want to do that either. I don't want to do that at all. Okay, moving on. The Steelers have loaded up this offseason. They've added several former All-Pros, Darius Slay, Jalen Ramsey, DK Metcalf, and Aaron Rodgers, of course. The Steelers are going to be a playoff team in 2025-26. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
They could be, but I'm going to say overreaction. There's no precedent, like I mentioned yesterday when I talked about this, there's no precedent for a leading passer, leading receiver, and leading rusher all leaving a team, then you replenish and you make the playoffs and have success. That's just not how it works. There's a meshing that has to happen. They now have some really big personalities, by the way. All of those names that you brought up, minus Darius Slay, but he's had his issues with, you know, back with Matt Patricia and the Lions. But Jalen Ramsey, big, big personality. DK Metcalf, big personality. Aaron Rodgers, biggest of the personalities. I wonder how this is going to mesh. I really do. And also, again, like I mentioned yesterday, if this was 2021, I'd feel great about it. I would love this team. This team would be probably top three shortest odds to go win the Super Bowl. But it's 2025, right? Darius Slay's 34, and he's been trending down for a couple years. Jalen Ramsey's been trending down for a couple years. He's 30. Aaron Rodgers is 41 freaking years of age. TJ Watt, they're probably going to sign him back. He's 30. Cam Hayward is still trying to retire at some point, but they haven't found a replacement for him. He's been a multiple-time Pro Bowler at the D-tackle position. He's 36. They have a lot of old guys. I'm worried about health as well. And when it comes to Aaron Rodgers, behind that offensive line, I have questions. I think it'll be a little bit different than it was with the Jets. He's not going to get a bunch of straight dropbacks in an Arthur Smith system. There's going to be more running the ball. They're going to bring on, you know, two or three tight ends in certain situations on early downs. And they're going to run play action. So, like, the escapability in the O-line may not have to hold up as much as the Jets did last year with the scheme they were running. But they could make the playoffs. They could be a wild card team. I look at their division, and I don't necessarily see them finishing top two. I think Bengals and Ravens would probably take that, although the Bengals are going to have to find a defense. But, you know, I could see them being a wild card team, but I'm not betting on that. I'm not doing it. It's way too much turnover. And like we talk about with Memphis basketball, right? You have to have some continuity for me to believe in you in the postseason. And I don't buy it at all with the Steelers. I think they've gone what they believe to be all in, but I don't know if it means much.
It seems like they've had an offseason where if everything works out, they could be really good. But a lot of things have to work out for that to happen. Their offensive line has to be better. Just simply has to be better because you have a 40-year-old quarterback behind you. You got to make sure you can get that 40-year-old quarterback through the season. And outside of DK Metcalf and Calvin Austin, they just don't have a ton of weapons. And it's like, you know, Jonnu Smith is certainly going to help, but they just don't have a ton of options.
Pat Freiermuth's a good tight end, but like Aaron Rodgers, if you've watched his career, and Christian Fowler mentioned this yesterday.
He's not a tight end guy.
Doesn't really throw it to tight ends all that much. So you're betting on a lot of things working out very well. You're paying a lot for this roster. I get where Steelers fans are angry. I don't necessarily mind that the Steelers are still trying to go for it. It's just I don't right now see this working out. And then you just look at their schedule, and they could be it's not great. It's not easy. You play in the AFC North, it's really hard. And guys do get injured in the AFC North, just to be clear. It's a rough and tumble division. Just, 9 wins, maybe save that sort of winning record Mike Tomlin thing.
Because I love Mike Tomlin. Love him.
But outside of that, I don't see this as a playoff, winning the first playoff game since 2016 under Mike Tomlin. I don't see this team making some miraculous run in the playoffs. I am at the point where I'm debating, are they even going to be in the mix by the time we get to like week 8? We'll see.
I know I'm going to be rooting for them though, because they got a couple Tigers. So I'm absolutely going to be rooting.
They got
for
a bunch of Tigers.
They got a ton of Memphis Tigers.
Quindell Johnson signed with them. Calvin Austin III. Kenny Gainwell. And I'm missing one.
Rock Taylor.
Rock Taylor. Rock Taylor.
My boy.
We'll see if he makes a team.
He's got to. He's going to catch it, I promise.
That wide receiver room, or at least making the roster as a wide receiver, shouldn't be that difficult.
Yeah.
If one, like, really good wide receiver, then sort of you get caught up in the mix. And also, I forgot to mention the other old guy. They brought in Robert Woods for a year, 33 years old.
We're going to talk about bad getters later.
And isn't
Robert Woods.
Isn't that a big issue as well? They don't really have a wide receiver that can eat up targets. Like last year with Aaron Rodgers, like Garrett Wilson can do that. Davante Adams really can do that. Like DK Metcalf, he'll get his targets, but he's not like a unbelievable route runner. He's more of just a big physical specimen who's going to be able to make contested catches, stuff like that. They don't really have like that wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers that he's used to, where it's just like, let me target this guy a million times and he'll come down with it more often than
I hope it's Calvin Austin. I hope. He could have a huge season with him.
We saw how he is utilized, though. Run your 40. That's sort of how he's used. Run a 9 route, you know, and see what happens.
So last year, Calvin Austin had 58 targets. You think he's going to get more than that this season?
I don't see why not. I guess there's some Robert Woods is going
to
get a few.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego sets play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Roman Wilson is now healthy, second round pick out of Michigan last year, so maybe it goes down, but this is year two. He's got more experience than those guys in this offense with Arthur Smith, so we'll see. We'll see. All right, now I want to pick up this conversation coming up next, but we also have some college football to discuss. Kyren Samuels from Sports Illustrated joins on the other side right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Kyren Samuels covers the NFL and college football for Sports Illustrated. And you can follow him and his work, along with his work, at Kyren Samuels on X. Ky, what's happening?
Happy to be back, man, with you talking Super Bowl or sports as always, man.
Yes, sir. Now, I just got done with a sort of segment and conversation about the Pittsburgh Steelers. We know what the trade was like earlier this week. They bring in Jalen Ramsey. The Dolphins were trying to offload him for a while, and they brought in Jonnu Smith. 88 receptions, 884 yards, 8 touchdowns. He was, you know, quietly one of the best tight ends in the league last year. I just need to ask this: how much do you buy in to them being a playoff team next year, or being at least in the hunt?
You know, it's an interesting conversation because I think they're going to be a very solid defense. I'm under the assumption that T.J. Watt returns.
Right.
We all know that he's in the midst of that negotiation, and they've been doing this song and dance for the last two seasons. So I'm under the assumption that all those guys will be back. Then you add a guy like Jalen Ramsey. For Micah Fitzpatrick, for all that he wasn't as much of a playmaker as he was in his Alabama career and early in the NFL. He was definitely more of an eraser at this point, taking away explosive plays, making tackles, and that is a valuable facet to a defense. But Jalen Ramsey is going to give you a guy that's going to take the ball away, get you pass breakups, be around the football a lot, get you some forced fumbles, fumble recoveries of that sort. He's a splash play guy. So you add that into a team like the Steelers, I think that they have a realistic shot to, you know, get to 10 wins as long as Aaron Rodgers gives them solid quarterback play. They don't need fantastic quarterback play. They don't need 2009 Aaron Rodgers again, or the MVP level in 2018, 2019, whichever year that was. If Aaron Rodgers, you know, plays similar to what he did last season, they should be in the position to win 10 games and probably make the playoffs just because their defense is so good and their special teams are so good. I think they should be in the conversation, but a lot of things have to go right for me to feel comfortable and excited about it. But we talk about Tom all the time. He's never had a losing season. I mean, last year, I'm of the belief that if he was able to make the playoffs with their team last year, they can make the playoffs with anybody, with anybody that has a decent quarterback in this situation, because I was all the way out on them last year. He still found a way. So I've learned to just never bet against Tom, and even against my better logic sometimes.
There's two things that give me like a tremendous amount of pause. One, the age. Like I keep saying it, but if this was 2021 and I looked at this roster, I may pick them to win the Super Bowl, right, with all of the great talent. But it's 2025, and, you know, Jalen Ramsey's 30, and Darius Slay's 34, and Aaron Rodgers is 41, and Cam Hayward's 36. Like, you just have a lot of old players. And then the other thing, and some people may, you know, argue against me on this, but we don't have any precedent for what they're trying to do here in regards to turning over the whole roster, lack of continuity. I understand that maybe you look at the upgrades they've made and the new players they have in as better, but they lost their leading receiver in George Pickens. They lost their leading passer in Russell Wilson, and they lost their leading rusher in Najee Harris. So, like, that's where I have a lot of pause with that. That would be unprecedented for them to have any level of, like, playoff success.
Yeah, I'm a little bit weary on the run game as well. I think for all the flack that Najee Harris gets from a certain faction of people, I think people fail to realize how steady he is as a back. You know what you're going to get from the guy. He averages about 4 yards a pop, despite all, you know, the offensive line issues that they had. And when you have the guy that gets you tough yards like that, it mitigates a lot of the pressures that you get in those short yardage situations, in those early downs. When you're able to, you know, convert on 3rd and 2 and 3rd and 3, and you're able to get to 2nd and 6 and 2nd and 5 instead of being 2nd and long a lot of times, even if it doesn't feel extremely exciting to watch at times, it's very valuable. So I think they're going to have to find a way to get those tough yards again this year, and that could be a big detriment to the team because they have some solid backs on the roster, but we've never seen any of those guys carry the load. So that is a big, you know, question mark going into the season. But like I said, man, I keep going back to, like, just average to above average play.
Right.
If you get above average quarterback play, if you get above average offensive line play, if you get around above average to average production from that able to running back, the defense and special teams are so good, I think they have a shot. So I'm not going to bet against it. I'm going to, you know, say they'll get around 9 wins should be the magic number for that team, and hope that some other squads have, you know, light lesser year or down year, or it's a little bit more competitive in the middle of the AFC there. But 9 wins should be the magic number in terms of realistic for them. I think if they can get there, they'll have a shot.
All right, Kai. The Dolphins were on the other end of that trade that happened earlier in the week.
Yeah,
and they bring in Minkah Fitzpatrick, and they lost Jonnu Smith. They're bringing in Darren Waller out of retirement with a trade with the Giants. I don't need any, like, fantastic breakdown. I just need to ask you, are you okay as a Dolphins fan? Are you okay?
I'm like, indifferent at this point. It's just what I've come to expect for the Dolphins. And I just don't really understand what the point is here. What is the goal? What is the aim? They're not really resetting in any capacity. You're trading some people, some that would say are aged out and they're already past their prime. People that have aged out and are already past their prime really don't see the direction here. So I've come to expect it, and I'm just going to hope that these draft picks stick and those guys like Jalen Phillips on the defense can stay healthy. And then hope for the best after that.
All right, college football, we have a new one-time transfer portal window. And it's from July 7th to August 5th. This is for college football. I want to ask you off top, what do you think about that timing, right? Like, that seems to be a strange time to open up the portal to everybody.
Yeah, in my opinion, it's the worst time.
Right before the season.
Yeah, and it's like, we talk about it from two aspects, right? Logistically, on like the admissions people and the people that have to put these kids in school and get them housed and all the you know, logistic things that have to go on behind the scenes, that's going to be extremely difficult for them to do at that point in the year. In the summer, where a lot of these people, some of these offices may not even be open for them to get that stuff handled. And I know football and, you know, prime athletics, they have different type of rules, but not every school that is going to be participating in this is an SEC, Big Ten, top tier, Big 12.
Oh, Kyron, we lost him. We'll get him back. But For those that have not seen the news that he was sort of discussing there, the transfer portal window in college football is open from July 7th to August 5th. And my question with it, and I'm going to, once we get Kyron back on, I'll go ahead and ask him this. It almost feels like the Power Four commissioners and the NCAA who ultimately made this decision, it feels like they're trying to punish players for getting into the portal. And I understand it to a certain extent, but that timing right there, that's when a lot of people are in fall camp, when people are getting geared up, when they're getting all set for the year. It just seems like a very strange time to open up the portal. And the high-level players, Kyron, do I got you?
Yep, we're here.
All right, now continue what you were saying. Like, the timing of the whole thing's strange.
Right, yeah, especially like those logistics are going to be tough, but those players are going to have it tough when they're having to fight to get in shape. Let's say you start in January and you're not able to get there until August or May. That's going to be extremely difficult from a physical standpoint for those guys to get ready. And on the flip side, it adds an entirely different level of responsibility for the coaching staff in the front office and everybody that's going to be involved will make this process goes right, because those guys are normally on vacation at this time of year, that month right before camp,
sure,
right after the hardest period of summer workout. They're going to have to be recruiting and integrate these guys into a system, maybe even having some type of crash course where you have to teach them an offense because they weren't able to go through spring, or get them integrated in the physical program. So it's going to be basically a more difficult process for a lot of these coaches and players now.
Yeah, it complicates things, and it complicates the schedule even worse for the coaches, like you mentioned, and institutions. Here's my thought, and I want to tell me if I'm right or wrong, or if I have some point I'm making here. It feels like this type of window, right before the season where fall camp would normally be, feels like it's a punishment to players who are transferring. Is that a fair sentiment? Because that would be a horrible time to get in the portal and try to find a new school.
Yeah, I'm with you there in that aspect. I think it is somewhat of a punishment or at least a deterrent, right? You don't want these guys hopping in the portal. You don't want these guys to have to go through these processes because you're hoping that this will encourage them to stay away. But I got news for you, buddy. The number of guys hopping in the portal increases every season for the last four seasons. So I don't expect it to change. I expect the load to be even more difficult in that shorter period of time.
All right. Now, moving on, we have LSU, an LSU story from On3. Well, NOLA News put it out. But LSU is one of the first schools, or the first school, that plans to sell jersey patches and advertisements for their jerseys. Does this do anything for you? Like, if it changed how I watch the game, yeah, I may have an issue. If I was looking at a field with it was just littered with advertisements, maybe I'd feel a little different. This doesn't feel like that big of a deal, and it feels like a lot of people are making a mountain out of a molehill.
Yeah, it's funny. It kind of goes a little bit back to that conversation we had last week about, private equity and how some stuff was going to get integrated in a stadium naming rights. And like you said, if there's going to be a million patches on the field, it may get to a point where people are fed up. But, let's say you find a sole sponsor, even NBA jerseys. You have, I know that Bobigo sponsors the Los Angeles Lakers. Nobody really cares. It's one patch. Right. You have it on there. But when you get to the point where, let's say you have, three or four patches. And
if it looks like a NASCAR kit or something like that, yeah, no.
Right.
That's where I draw my line.
Basketball team. So that's when it could get to a detriment. But I do think it shows, the current state of college football, where we're trending and where we're headed. I mean, everybody is trying to load up as much as possible and get as much funding and as much dollars. And the brands that, they see these television statistics. They see that 8 million people are tuning in to watch Colorado play Baylor or something on a Saturday afternoon, and 12 million people are watching Alabama play Georgia at 7 o'clock. People want their brands out there, and they're willing to pay top dollar to get it. So this is where we're headed, and I think as long as it doesn't become too overt, people will be okay with it.
It's revenue. You have to generate it as much as possible, and LSU is not going to be the only team that does this. I think we'll get a lot more announcements once they actually find their deal. Now you're an Alabama guy. You're very familiar with Alabama. They're recruiting their ass off, Kyron. I thought that when Nick Saban left, it was supposed to go downhill. Kalen DeBoer, he's doing a pretty dang good job. This is Saban level, if not better, right this second. They have 4 5-star commits in the 2026 class. They are the only school in the country with over 2 5-star commits.
Yeah, they're doing well on the recruiting front. And this is, you know, momentum that has carried over from last season. I thought they did a fantastic job, you know, salvaging what was left of, you know, decommits and the people that maybe have jumped off the ship a little bit after the, you know, 9-3 regular season. It wasn't dominant. It's funny to say that, you know, a 9-3 season, feeling like the earth is falling beneath you. But that's what it was last season at the point after that Oklahoma game. So for them just to salvage that class and still finish with the top three, top two class, depending on what site or what service you look at, mm-hmm. I believe it was ranked number two or number three composite, which you combine all of those recruiting sites. It speaks to the type of staff that they have, and to have the momentum that they have now with the level of guys, it's really important, because a lot of the talk was about not being able to secure the state of Alabama, because Auburn had a really good year in the state of Alabama last year recruiting, not being able to secure elite recruits from Georgia, which has been a hotbed for Alabama the last two seasons, through the Saban era. But now the last two seasons, it's become a little bit of a hard point there. Well, all four of those five stars we mentioned, two are from the state of Georgia, two are from the state of Alabama. So they really answered all the questions recruiting-wise, and I attribute a lot of that to what they were able to do with their support staff. They were one of the first teams in the country to hire a general manager. Courtney Morgan helped build rosters at both Washington and went to the national championship, and Michigan, the year that they went to the national championship. Both of those rosters, he had a hand in building, and he's been Bo's right-hand man for a while. So he was one of the first guys to get officially hired as a general manager, and he got a raise the last season. So, you know, Greg Byrne and those guys and everybody that was involved really invested in that staff, and now they have a full support staff just dedicated to recruiting. Not like it used to be where you had a recruiting staff where it was, you know, a bunch of volunteers and a bunch of people helping out, but I'm talking about full-time staffers, and I think you're seeing that pay off in the long run right now. Hopefully it will continue because they put in a lot of work for that.
What's interesting to me, though, and I know it was a 9-3 season and they didn't make the college football playoff and people debate if they should have, whatever, Alabama. But, like, the view of Kalen DeBoer versus what he actually is as a coach, I don't know if you feel this. I feel this way. The view of him as a coach versus what he actually is, and a guy who brought Washington to a national championship, the way he's recruiting right now, he can recruit at a very high level. He knows what to target. It's so strange, the difference of what he actually is versus how he's viewed after a 9-win season at Alabama in year one.
Yeah, I'm with you there, and I believe that you kind of saw glimpses of what he was able to do last season. If you look at the big games, Alabama played fantastic. You look at what they were able to do at that point in the season going up to Wisconsin and Camp Randall, which was a question mark. You know, you didn't really know what to expect at that point. And they went and won that game, you know, about 3-4 touchdowns. You get Georgia at home, one of the biggest games of the season. They beat Georgia. They dominated early, had to come back late, but they find a way to win that game. And a lot of that was due to his play calling and the guts to throw back up on his own end zone after that slump they went in the second half, and still trusting the Milroe and those guys to make plays. And then you get the Ryan Williams play, and they win that game. And you have a lot of success after you lose to that Vanderbilt team. You come back, and they're able to dominate against LSU. So a lot of the bigger games, he was able to handle business. Even the Auburn Iron Bowl, they weren't, you know, the best team. But if you lose that Iron Bowl and go 8-4, it's still a big story. So the Georgia, LSU, Auburns of the world, he's winning those rivalry games, mm-hmm. the little games that he has to figure out how to get those guys up for. Like the Vanderbilt game that we talked about, like the Oklahoma game, which was considered to be a formality at that point. So I think a lot of that is also on the players. I don't think those coaches, you know, didn't prepare those guys to go in there and handle business, but it is a reflection on you at that point. But like I said, what he's viewed as and what he actually is, to me, he's a guy.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5. With Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time, they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and, in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
That has the team prepared to play, and he's fearless in these games. If you look at what he was able to do at Washington, going forward on fourth down, I remember, I'll never forget, watching them at Oregon, that game where he was just fearless. Going forward, he trusts his guys, trusts Michael Penix in those late-game situations. Same thing at Alabama here when you had him against Georgia late in that game. He trusts his guys. He's going for the gusto. So I think he's a guy that's more fearless and manages the game a lot better than people give him credit for. And I think that'll show over the next few seasons.
Now, before you go, I do have to wish you a congrats to your Los Angeles Lakers. Just signed DeAndre Ayton, their center of the future. 2 years, $16.6 million. Shout out to your Lakers. They're really making it happen out on the open market, huh?
What does it come to, man? What does it come to for the Lakers where this is like the save the franchise type of deal? I won't say I'm embarrassed.
Hey, you get to hinge your hopes on Jake LaRavia and DeAndre Ayton. No, you can't ask for much more. Come on.
I won't say I'm embarrassed, but let's say I'm less than excited about the season. I think another first or second round exit is calling, and there's no disrespect to Aiden or LaRavia or those guys. They're going to be upgrades probably in a lot of ways, but not significant enough to where you're going to beat, you know, the teams that just made these fantastic upgrades, plus the Nuggets, plus the Thunder. It just feels rather bleak there, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe Rob Pelinka has something up his sleeve. Who knows? Maybe.
Hopefully, man.
Because if this is the pitch, Kai, to keep LeBron in L.A., Jake LaRavia and DeAndre Ayton, that's not a good pitch. That doesn't seem like a pitch that LeBron and Rich Paul want to hear.
Yeah, and especially not if the icing on the cake is going to be nearly 40-year-old Al Horford, which is coming out of the report.
I love Al. Future Hall of Famer Al Horford, though. Let's be clear. Let's call him by his real name.
He's a champion. I respect him. But, yeah, I'm not embarrassed. I'm discouraged.
Yeah, I got you. Well, Kai, have a good 4th of July. We'll catch up soon.
Likewise, man. Talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. He is Kyren Samuels, college football and NFL for Sports Illustrated. Go check out all of his work and his Twitter at Kyren Samuels. Now, hour number 2 is on the way, and we have some more of the same to talk about on the other side. Starting up hour number 2, we'll have David Cobb. Make sure you stick around. Gabe Kuncho, 92.9 FM ESPN.
It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with. And Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy. It's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego Bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego Bricks.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life, all told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.